Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 23rd, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm a very groggy Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long. Why are you groggy?
Well, you know, I'm afraid to go to sleep these days now, and I'm sort of getting insomnia. Because apparently you're rubbing off on me, or my subconscious at least, because I'm starting to dream about poker.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No, I tell you, it is when you're in a poker tournament against Phil Hellmuth, and he's throwing a tantrum because, you know, we're at a local bowling alley. I don't know why we're at a bowling alley. And I say local, yeah, I don't really even know what the bowling alleys look like around here, so it just seems local to me. And,
you just knew it was a long road trip for you.
Yeah. So, we're playing in a hand, and it was not unlike the hand of the week that I had a little while ago, which we'll probably be talking about pretty soon, where I think I played like rags against him because I was in the big blind or something, and I check-raised him, and he paid me off, then got up and did one of his little tirades and, you know, ran down the bowling alley, and I'm like, Phil, you can't walk on the approaches of the bowling alley lanes without bowling shoes on, and I'm trying to really get him really mad at me. And
everybody knows that rule. Come on. Even the drunks know that rule.
I know, but he didn't care, man. He was too fuming, too much on tilt that he could barely understand what he was doing himself, never mind how I was playing. And so then he throws chips at me, you know, and then he comes back, and I look down, and I'm like, Phil, you shortchanged me. You didn't pay me enough. You need to give me like 3 more blacks or something. And then he starts yelling again. And you know, weren't the yellows I gave you enough? And I'm like, no, it wasn't enough, Phil. And we're going back and forth. And it was the weirdest thing. It's like, I mean, I can't believe that I was dreaming about Phil Hellmuth.
Yeah, that's most unfortunate. You know, of all the poker players to dream of.
I know. And so now I'm afraid to go to sleep.
Yeah, I can understand that. Wow. Maybe you're going to get one of those Steve Martin Ambiens.
I'd like somebody to break this dream down, you know. Where's Freud when you need him? Why am I dreaming about Hellmuth? Why are we in a bowling alley? Why is Hellmuth shortchanging me? Why am I bringing up bowling etiquette to the brat? I don't understand. And, yeah. And I, you know, of all the poker dreams I could have had, you know, with the November 9 and all that now, maybe me being in the November 9 or winning millions or... No. Me in a bowling alley with Phil Hellmuth playing for nothing, you know, except for, like, a bar tab.
The funny thing is there's a pretty good discussion going on our forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum about what happens when a player says call but doesn't actually put the chips in and then racks up and leaves. So
Yeah.
So maybe you're channeling that, and you know, and Phil is becoming the Deutsche Bank in the real life example in your dream.
Well, I made him pay up, and he did pay me off, and then I woke up. So
well, good. If you can figure out how you made him pay up, you might want to post that on the forum so folks know how to deal with the situation in the future.
I merely insisted.
Merely insisted. I like that.
So anyway, I'm pretty tired. I just haven't been able to sleep comfortably anymore since that dream invaded my subconscious. So. But you're on vacation. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It was our 10th anniversary last night.
Wow.
And having a good time. And but of course, you know, you can't go on vacation, and the podcast doesn't go on vacation.
No, podcast never goes on vacation. The PokerCast always takes precedence.
Right, absolutely. So so we're getting through this show with some good stuff. And you know what? people, I figured this out a long time ago, our listeners, and if we had nothing but hand analysis, people would be pleased as peaches, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, I would probably agree with that, except the part of the group that doesn't even really care about that would realize that we're terrible at it and wouldn't listen anymore. So I don't know. It's like six of one, half dozen of the other.
But you know, I think you touched on it. I think why people like a hand analysis on our show is because we have no idea what we're doing.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
It's like Abbott and Costello breaking down poker hands.
Oh,
who's on the flop?
Who's on the flop?
You know, so you had a very, very good hand of the week a couple weeks ago from out in Vegas. And maybe it's just because it was you in the hand, but I think the hand is pretty good too. So maybe I'm just projecting that.
Yeah.
But we've got a lot of feedback on that particular hand when you had the 9-8 and flopped a boat and then lost the two outer with the pocket kings. Not that I'm trying to dredge it back up.
I'm over it now. I'm over it.
Yeah, and get your sleep off, you know, a little bit more. But you know, we picked two of my favorites here. I mean, one, we got a kind of fake hotline call from Jason Finn. Couldn't fit it all in the minute, so he had to, like, you know, tape it in his little studio.
Yeah.
And send it to us. And then after we listen to that call, I'll read a little letter from one of our listeners named David, and we'll chat.
All right, let's hear it.
Hey guys, it's Jason Finn, aka Chicago Jason, from the Windy City Poker Championship and the soon-to-be-revitalized ChicagoPokerClub.net. I've been listening to your show a great deal lately, and wanted to comment on a show a couple of weeks back, one featuring Mike the Bard Faso. It's always great to hear Mike's voice and to celebrate in his antics. I found myself pointlessly yelling at you guys during the hand of the week 2 weeks ago. Sure, I might have played Chris's hand a little bit differently, but it was the conclusion of the hand that really overcooked my French toast. First of all, Chris flopped a full house in this particular hand, and given the stacks, he should really be dedicating all of his energy to figuring out how to get all of his opponent's chips into the pot, whether that happens on the flop or across all three streets. There was $120 in the pot pre-flop, and Chris only had $195 behind, so he shouldn't be worried about making big folds, but rather should be looking to get all the money in the pot. Depending on the opponent, I think this is a good spot to make a weak lead, either to get the opponent to call, or if he has a big hand preflop, to come over the top with a raise. If our opponent does have a big hand, let's say hypothetically pocket jacks, he's going to put in that raise and we can let the rest play out with our already inflated pot. There's 1.5 times the size of the pot in our stack on the flop, so we aren't folding this hand. Probably ever. I digress. What killed me, I mean, what really killed me, guys, was Chris's reaction to the showdown. Chris says, he had to know I had a 9. What's he doing? Really, Chris? When you flopped a full house, was it your objective to demonstrate to your opponent that he'd be wise to get away? Or were you actually trying to get value for outflopping him? If you wanted him to fold the turn, there's a real easy way to do that. Show him the 9. Just turn the card over. Hey, dude, I've got a 9. But you knew that you were a better than 19-1 favorite at the time, and you obviously wanted the call, and you got the call, which means you played the hand just fine. Personally, I might have tried to get all the money in on the turn. There were too many scare cards that could have come on the end. Alas, you won a ton of equity in this hand, despite the fact that you lost dollars. Forget the actual results, and next time, just make sure it's you that sucks out on the other guy. Keep up the great work, and hope to see you both soon.
Yeah, you know, Jason's right. The problem was that I was just down a bunch of money already, and I'm like, he's right, man. I could have just showed the 9 if I didn't want to call, but of course I wanted to call. I had a full house right there, and what were the odds this guy was going to hit a 2-outer, and he's absolutely right. I got exactly what I wanted, exactly what I deserved, so, you know, whatever. I agree with him, though, 100%.
Yeah, it doesn't make it any easier, though.
No, it doesn't make it any easier to swallow, but, yeah. No, I he's right. I mean, I guess if I was really afraid of a 2-outer, I would have showed him the 9. You're just never afraid of that when you've got almost all your money in there already. And I guess there probably is a way I could have won that hand, but we'll see. We'll see if David comes up with a theory that would work.
All right, here's what David said. He said, "I was thinking about whether he could have won the hand if he played it differently." So see,
yeah.
Stay tuned here. Maybe you'll figure this out.
Maybe next time.
He says, "I think the only chance he could have had was if he shoved on the flop, possibly on the turn when calling the raise, Haas." And I love that. I love how we're saying Haas now. I don't even know what a Haas is, but everybody's calling everybody Haas. I'm like, so, you know, I'll go in the grocery store now. I'm like, hey, Haas. I don't even know what I'm calling them, but they all nod and are happy with it.
Remind me to say something to you after this hand, after this letter, I mean.
All right, so he says, when calling the Rays, Haas must have known that most callers would do so for EV. He would have put you on a small pair or Ace X. Then the shove would have represented to him that you either had only hands that beat him as 8, X, or pocket pair, all which he has beat except Ace-Ace. Based on the size of the pot, it's worth the risk for 80, but a bet of 180 may have been sufficiently strong enough to make Haas think twice about making the hero call. Other than folding, that was probably the best opportunity to take the pot. So what do you think, Haas?
Well, I don't think on the flop it would have gone anywhere. Your pocket kings, if he calls me all the way down with pocket kings to the river, he's going to call me on a flop for another 100, you know, since he bet that much on the turn or whatever, called that much on the turn or whatever it was. I can't remember now. It's been I'm trying to put it out of my memory. But but maybe the turn, if I had just shoved on the turn, he may have said, well, this guy could have a straight already. This guy could have, a nine. So maybe I think the turn is the place where I probably could have played it differently and taken it down. But other than that, I don't think any flop bet would have gotten this guy to go away, considering his actions when I didn't, except just check call him. So, and the other thing I was going to say was, in the bowling world, everyone is Haas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've been calling each other Haas since I was probably 11 or 12 years old. I've been hearing it, and it's hilarious. And I guess it's after the guy from Bonanza. You know, they call it
all the way back to Bonanza.
Yeah, he's Haas, and then that's just. And then the best part about it is that if you don't remember somebody's name, it's a much more personal way to forget someone's name than to say, "Hey, man." You know, if you say, "Hey, Haas," it's like as if you know him. You know,
a little more of that affection in it.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's where that Haas came for me. I don't know what it is for David, but that's pretty hilarious.
All right, well, Haas is what I'm going to call people from now. I want to be on the good side. I don't want them, shortchanging me my dreams. a couple of housekeeping items. And, Chris, you remember we got this little cruise going on, right?
I faintly remember some sort of details.
Yeah, let me refresh you just because, I know you're a little groggy here. It's October 25th from Port Canaveral, Florida to the Bahamas. Just $299 a person based on double occupancy. All the details are at antiupmagazine.com/cruise. And you have to book by August 19th to guarantee that price. And, Chris, last week we reported that we had more than 20% of our cabins gone already. You remember that now?
I do remember that.
It is more than 45% now.
Oh, man, every week goes up 20-25%.
Been a big week for the Antiup Cruise and Farm bookings. In fact, we're running very low on Ocean View rooms now. So, if people out there are still dawdling, you're going to get stuck in one of those inside cabins. And there's nothing wrong with an inside cabin if that's all you have left because, we want you to come regardless. But I'm just saying, if you want to be able to see the Gulf or the Atlantic, whatever it is.
See the Gulf, that's pretty remarkable.
The Baltic, the Mediterranean, whatever it is out there, you're going to want to call soon. And if that's not enough, last week we talked about the new freebie, those great Antiup Dealer buttons from Palm Gaming International that joins the free Don Baruch Poker Strategy Course and the free Open Bar Cocktail Party. That's all part of this $299. This week, this little resort called the Atlantis, Chris?
I think I've heard of it, actually.
It's got that big bridge suite that's like $20,000 a night, and only Oprah Winfrey can stay there.
And isn't it all underwater, the whole place?
Yeah, pretty much. It's got this huge, massive water park and a great casino.
Yeah.
Well, they seem to really like our cruise because they are the newest sponsor of it, and they want our players, when they get to Nassau. Go ahead and make fun of me.
No, you said it right, dude. That's why I'm not saying anything. I can't believe
Nassau. All right. They want them to get off the boat and head straight to the beautiful Atlantis, which you should do anyhow because it's just a modern marvel.
Yeah.
But to get you there, they're going to give you a $50 match play coupon.
Man, that's unheard of.
I misspeak on the show a lot, but that was correct. 50, not $5, not $10, $50. And I was talking to you this week, because you remember I used to be a huge gambler and stuff before I got into this poker thing. And, now I just give my money to other people in a peer-to-peer situation. I love the match plays. I do those little coupon runs when I'm out in Vegas. And the highest one I've ever seen ever in my life is $25.
Jeez.
And I've only seen like three of those. It's kind of like the Yeti.
Sasquatch.
Yes, exactly. But this is $50. So here's the thing. You put $50, and if you don't know what a match play is, you get this coupon. You put on an even money bet anywhere in the casino with your own $50. So like on red or black and roulette or on the pass line and craps or in a hand of blackjack. And if you win, they don't give you $50. They give you $100.
That is awesome.
So remember, it's $2.99 a person. With one hand of blackjack or one spin of the roulette wheel, you can get third of your cruise back.
That's true, man. I never thought about it like that.
Third of your cruise back. You know, plus, that morning you have the camp already, so you have the camp and you got the dealer button in your pocket already, and you already got drunk at the open bar cocktail party. So by like 12:30 on Tuesday, you can have your cruise paid for already.
You know, it's sad to admit, but of all the unbelievably great things that can happen to you out in Vegas, one of the best times I had is always following you around with the damn coupons, watching you do the match play. It's just like, yep, there's another $10, bucket it in your wallet. Your wallet starts, you know, bloating like George Costanza's. It's hilarious. It's one of my favorite things when we go out there. That's exciting, man. You get that free match play and $50 too. When you told me it was 50, I was like, did you say 15? And you're like, no, 50, 50. I was like, oh my God, that's huge.
Yeah, they're real excited for our group, and I should also mention that offer is pending Bahamian Gaming Board approval, so but they don't expect any problems with that. But you know, we keep adding free stuff here, and that's why we keep selling cabins. So so go to antiantmagazine.com/cruise, get all the details, including that new offer. And give me your little ringy ding, and we'll get you on the boat.
Ringy ding, ding, dingy doo. Well, we also got Apes coming up, right? We got a couple of events. Pretty excited. And speaking of free, another free one, the free roll, noon Eastern Time, July 24th. That's this Saturday.
That's this Saturday.
That's tomorrow if you're listening on Friday. And it's Deuce of Seven triple draw. Not an easy ticket to win.
No.
An easy ticket to win.
No.
Pretty painful, actually. You really deserve it when you get it.
It's true, and I'm a little disappointed I'm not going to be able to play this this week because I'm on vacation and stuff, but I really want to get some more little Deuce to Seven practice in, though, you know, I did very well in the Zips a couple weeks ago, so
right.
I'm at the top of my Deuce to Seven game right now, which is kind of like, you know, on top of that end table.
Yeah, it's still not very high.
Yeah. It's on top of something, but it's not high by any stretch, so, but I'm looking forward to the real event on Saturday, July 31st, also at noon. And, of course, these are both on PokerStars, of course. And go to antiantmagazine.com/apes, for all those details. And the password, which is prominently displayed there, much to the chagrin of a lot of people and much to the handicap of people that, hey, where's the password? So go there, get it. Get in the free roll, win 10 seats, and then we'll see you next week when I'm going to get my triple draw on.
It's time for our Ante Up News Desk.
The World Series of Poker November 9 has been set and showing the strength of Florida poker, Chris. 3 of the 9 call Florida home, including the revitalized Michael the Grinder Mizrachi, who is today's guest on the show.
Yeah, I actually interviewed him before, of course, he made the November 9, but I did ask him, you know, if how he thought he was going to do, and he said he's running well and he feels good, and that was after day one when he had 140,000 chips. So, you know, we'll hear what he has to say later on. The British Columbia Lottery Corporation has launched North America's first government-run online casino. Reuters reports, PlayNow.com offers several casino games and will add poker this year. And a little special thanks to Ante Up National, John Ainsworth, for giving us this news tip.
Yeah, a little news hound out there.
Yes.
And, you know, it's exciting. You know, it's good to see that the governments are getting closer to us because, you know, that's how things work in our country. You know, one state comes to its senses on gaming, and then the next state goes, hey, well, I don't want to lose out. And then it's kind of like, you know, a very slow-moving tidal wave. But it gets there. And so hopefully that British Columbia, you know, it's on the West Coast, so it's going to have to go a long way to get to Washington, but we'll wait for it.
Hey, but it has Columbia in the name, so, you know.
True,
know, the District
yes.
of Columbia, you know, maybe they'll maybe feel just, slighted.
It'll just wormhole to the...
That's right, wormhole with Morgan Freeman.
And much to speaking of what we're talking about, the last item, Annie Duke was the featured speaker at a congressional hearing on Wednesday for Barney Frank's bill to regulate online gaming. And she said the issue at its most basic is the right for Americans to do what they want to do in their own homes.
Hmm. Yeah.
So we still got action going on here. We don't have the action going on in British Columbia, but we're getting there.
I have to say that I appreciate Annie Duke.
Do you?
For all the, you know, the jabs we always say about her attitude and things like that, you know, she's always there, and I know she'll reap the benefits of it as much as anyone else, but she's very articulate, obviously incredibly smart, and, you know, she's always coming through for online gaming for us, and I appreciate her effort. I have to say that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we hope something comes from it.
Hey, don't get weepy on me.
Well, you know, I kind of feel like the national anthem's going to have to be playing here in the background. Here. Oh, God Bless America or something.
All right, our hotline is 813-448-1120. If you call in, like Paul Molinar did, and we use the clip, we might give you something pretty cool. So let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, guys, it's Paul Molinar from South Carolina. I hear the expression, men cash. And to me, any cash is a good cash, but what, in your guys' opinion, is a men cash? When is a men cash a cash? When is a cash a good cash or a great cash? Just kind of interested to hear your opinion on that.
What do you consider a men cash? I consider a men cash, you know, the first available spots in the money, I guess, right?
Well, here's the thing. Anytime I cash, I feel like I've made the November 9. That's how excited I get, so I don't really quibble over how much money it is.
Right.
I just run around the casino like I just won the lottery. but yeah, I guess a min cash is, I guess it depends on you. I mean, I think obviously you're right. The first couple pay spots are probably a min cash, but I don't feel bad cashing ever. I mean, I know you have to be hungry enough to not want to just cash, but to win or hit those high pay spots. But, you know, it's so hard to cash in any tournament. I mean, most tournaments, only 10% cash. The tournaments that Colombo plays, you know, no one ever cashes. And so if you get there, you know, it's tough to be disappointed. So, I guess I don't really understand why we need to solve this mystery.
We have another whole mystery to solve later on in the show, so we don't want to waste any energy on that one.
Yeah, is that an effective way of just ignoring the whole hotline question, just getting right to a swag?
Well, you know, I mean, if you take at its bare, you know, min, meaning minimum, the minimum amount of cash that it is, you know, just getting into the money. Obviously, they're not going to have a cashing amount that's less than your buy-in. So I would consider, you know,
I've
anything
seen it
that.
Sometimes, actually, which is odd.
Oh, well, then there you go. That would be the absolute min cash.
That would be a min cash.
If you're making less cash than what you bought it for, that's a min cash.
Don't see it often, but I have seen it sometimes. But but I guess a better sense is, you know, are you happy with the money you got back for the time you've invested?
Yeah.
You're walking away from the tournament with that money in the envelope that you just won, and you're like, man, this wasn't worth it. That's probably a min cash. You walk away, you're like, you know what? It's not a bad day at the office. That's not a min cash.
Got to play poker for a while, you know, enjoyed the scenery, made some money. All right, I'm happy. Well, what's he win? This is definitely more than a min cash here, I think.
Yeah, see, he's already plus $10 because he gets a $10 get a stake staking package from getastake.com, and so, you know, he uses that stake for tournaments and he cashes in any of them. None of those would be a min cash ball.
All right,
because you're free rolling, so everything you get, you should be ecstatic about, and tie 10% back to Annie.
All right, we got a cool mailbag this week, which is actually part of our new Call the Floor column that's going to be appearing in our magazine. So I'm pretty excited about this. Do you want to read the letter or you want me to?
Well, I just want to say real quickly, this was the letter that instigated our whole Call the Floor.
Yep.
This letter has been sitting in our email box since August of last year.
I don't even know if Marty's still a fan of the show.
Marty might have moved on to Rounders or radio or something like that now. But Marty, if you're still with us, sorry it's taking us so long. But it's a complicated question that you and I are not capable of answering.
Yeah, no.
Which is generally 90% of questions. So I wanted to wait until we had a tournament director on the show, and apparently we haven't had a tournament director on the show in a year. So I started thinking about it, and we do this Call the Floor thing, and go to antiupmagazine.com/forum and post some questions there, and we have our terrifically talented Antioch Poker Cruise poker room managers, who both are running rooms out in Nevada now, answer the questions. And so that's finally who we had to pose these to.
Now, do you want to read it or do you want me to read it? Because it's, you know, it's pretty long.
Yeah, it's pretty long. Let me see how many words I can hack in it.
Okay.
All right, here it comes from Marty Grinstead. And he says, at the final table of a live tournament, player one moves all in preflop. Players two and three call. On the flop and turn, players two and three check. On the river, player two moves all in. Player three calls and has player two covered. All right, everybody got their little diagram on their dry erase board? All right. The dealer asks players two and three to turn over their cards for showdown. Player two turns over ace high, and player three mucks his cards face down into the side pot. The dealer pushes player two to the side pot. The dealer then asks player one to turn his cards over. He has a small pair. And at the same time, the dealer picks up the muck cards from player three and turns them over. When does this happen? Player three misread player two's cards, and player three actually had the best hand with two pair. The floor's ruling was to prevent collusion that all hands at showdown will be evaluated and a losing hand is not eligible to collect any chips. Player three was not awarded the main pot since the hand was mucked before the dealer could evaluate the hand. Player two was beat by player one, so player two would not get the main pot. Player one was beat by the mucked hand of player three, so player one would not get the main pot. The chips were taken out of play, and player one was eliminated from the tournament. But using that logic, why did player two get the side pot?
Oh, my God.
Do you feel like I'm taking the LSAT now? Or?
I think everyone's going to have to rewind the show like six or seven times to figure this one out before they even want to hear the answers that we have. That, oh, my God, that was impossible to follow.
One train
almost
leaves Charleston at 4:16, another train, and, man. Yeah.
All right, so basically what happened was one player's cards got mucked because they thought they didn't win, but they have to be turned over.
Right.
Right? And then they were turned over, they found out they did win, but then they took the chips out of play anyway because the guy mucked.
Right.
All right, so that's, oh,
yeah,
my God.
I guess I can see that. I mean, there's a case to be made for doing it that way, but Marty gives a good question. Why did player two get the side pot? So we asked both Jody Russell and Cassie Green to chime in on this.
I'll be Jody.
You be Jody.
And you be Cassie, because I have facial hair, so I'm more like Jody.
Oh, okay, very nice. I'm on vacation, man. You haven't seen me yet.
Okay, that's true.
Bruce is freaking Adams right now.
Well, here's what Jody said. It seems to me the floor person didn't realize the chips had been pushed to player two. He seems to have a handle on the ruling, which explains why he didn't let player one have the main pot. Perhaps he was preoccupied with that situation and forgot about the other chips. Player two definitely should not have been awarded those chips. If the decision is to take the chips out of play, they should all be taken out of play.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, I can't say at any time in my poker career that I've seen chips taken out of play.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean,
that was previously in a live person stack. I mean,
right, exactly. Not the dead stacks, but yeah.
Yeah, the dead stacks, but All right, well, here's what Cassie says. She says, I can't see any reason to take the chips out of play. Player three's hand cannot be mucked because there is an all-in. In tournaments, all hands must be shown down when there is an all-in situation. The chips must go to the winning hand.
I agree. Regardless of the guy being a dork and, you know, folding into the muck, makes no difference. That hand has to be shown and was shown. And now he has chips. He deserves to win those chips. His hand won, regardless of how stupid he was. And he deserves to get the chips. Player two shouldn't get the side pot. It's kind of weird. What a weird situation. You know, and it makes that movie, Lucky Me, all the more crappy. Because
yes.
You remember the end of it when he mucks intentionally so his dad can win. Can't do that, buddy. Sorry.
All right, so I get the whole collusion thing, and I'm a strong proponent of showing the hands down, but I get the fact that the hand is mocked, too. I mean, if you're showing the hearts just to prove that there was no collusion,
yeah.
I mean, I guess I can see a case for it also being mocked in a weird sense. I mean, obviously, that doesn't follow what our managers are saying would happen, but, you know, the prevent collusion is not to be sure the pot's awarded to the correct person, in my opinion. It's just to show that you don't have somebody like the Lucky You situation going on, right?
Right. But because you are – the mere fact that you are showing that collusion is or is not happening, you have to award whatever winning hand is win. Because if you're saying, look, I'm showing that it's not collusion, but yet it was collusion because you had two pair, then you have to – the winning hand has to be represented, right? No matter what, you have to represent the winning hand.
Yeah, so I guess then the point is did the tournament director not – suspect any collusion by the winning player mucking his hand here. I mean, I would think maybe that player would have gotten a penalty in some rooms.
Okay, maybe a penalty, you know, for not showing the best hand or something. Maybe, but yeah. Even so, he should still get the chips. The winning hand needs to get the chips, even if the guy made a mistake. I mean, if Phil Ivey on TV, when he mucked the flush that time, when he had the winning flush, if that was for someone's all-in, they would have turned his cards over. They would have given him the chips. You know, they would not have said, well, here's the winning hand, but it's not getting the chips. We're going to give it to the losing hand, let the guy stay in the tournament. So I think that, yeah, maybe a penalty might have been, in like you said, in place there. But definitely the chips need to go to someone who won the hand, not someone who didn't win the hand. Kind of weird.
Now I wonder if they proved it was collusion, and so the chips go to the winning guy who was colluding, and then they kick him out of the tournament. What do you do with the chips then?
Yeah, then you leave the chips there and you blind them off. You blind them off.
All right, well, what happens if he cashes then? You know, like I'm prone to do when I...
That's true, when you're not around. Yes. We donate it to a charity.
Yes, there we go, the local food bank. I like that. All right, see, go. We solved the world's problems.
There you go. Well, actually, what we should do, we should just kick everybody out of all tournaments and donate all the money, and no one would be hungry.
Yeah. We'll get working on that.
All right.
All right, Marty. Well, I appreciate your almost year-long wait, so we're going to give you some swag as promised, and we're going to send you a tremendous deck of those J-Design playing cards, some classic playing cards, .com, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. And hurry up, because time's running out on the contest on his website at classicplayingcards.com to win some of those really cool uncut sheets. So go there and register and win some other stuff.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the airline steward. We're at the 8160 level at a multi-table online tournament, and it folds around to me in the button, and I look down at Ace of Diamonds, Ace of Clubs.
I can't imagine it could be that easy.
I'm not going to screw around here, I'm going to make my 3x raise to 480, but I am aware that this may look like a button raise. I have 6,200 to start the level. The small blind folds, but the big blind tanks for 15 seconds and then calls. He has 8,300 to start the level. The flop comes down 9 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds, and our big blind checks. This is not exactly a dry board, so I bet 3 quarters of the pot, or 750 into the 1K pot. Our big blind opponent calls.
Surprising, to say the least.
The turn is the 8 of clubs, and the big blind immediately bets 1750 into the 2500 pot. Within split seconds, I click the time button. In the chat window, one of the players types check 10. So, what do you think?
Okay, Chris. This is a situation where I think we, you know, sometimes you do everything right, but life just happens.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
It doesn't matter that you played it brilliantly. At some point, the cards just don't let you in. So I think we played this right pre-flop. I think we played this right on the flop. And now when our opponent bets into us on the turn and we only have an overpair and can only improve to a set, that's a two-outer. So unless we think he's on a bluff and we're willing to raise to prove it, it's hard to consider any other action. The only weak straw we have is that we have the ace of both flush suits, but I think to take advantage of that, we have to hope that the river is one of those cards and put a healthy raise in. For me, on the risk-reward board, this is way too heavy on the risk.
Yeah.
Easy for me, in my opinion.
Yeah. What does the owner of the Raiders say? Just fold it, baby.
Just fold it, baby.
It's just way too coordinated and way too many hands beat us. You know, I think back to the TJ Cloutier video game that we reviewed way back, way, way, way back 5 years ago when he's talking about pocket aces and then the board comes jack, nine, ten, and somebody bets into you. What do you do? And he's like, let him go. It's just so that's what I'm thinking here. Unless you've got a real beat on this guy, like this guy, you know, does the old Johnny Chan move and calls your flop bet, but bets into you on the, that's a Johnny Chan move, by the way. I don't know if you knew that, but the experience I've had with Johnny Chan. And anyway, what's the point of calling or raising here? If you raise, really, you're really just going to get called or re-raised by a better hand. And if you call, you're not going to find out anything. And you know you're just going to face a bet on the river again. And all you have is one pair. You know, we played it right, and now we need to play it right again and fold. That's how I feel.
All right. Well, we went to our folks on the forum at neupmagazine.com/forum, and they were unanimous in folding.
Well, we all say fold, so obviously the detective's going to fold.
Obviously. Obviously.
All right. Let's hear
but
part
just for
two.
Giggles. Let's find out.
Welcome back. In situations like this, I feel you need to ask yourself a question. Is this guy tricky or tricky dumb? I started the level with an M of 25, and his is even higher. And he calls a raise from the big blind on a flop of 9-6-5, and then he check calls. What's his range now?
What's he thinking?
If he's not insane, he has either flopped a 9 with a diamond redraw or even a bigger monster. The pot is about 2,500 and I have 5K behind. So it's a big pot, but I'm far from committed with 1,250 invested.
It's very painful, sir.
When the 8 of clubs comes, it sets up a second redraw and gives the 7 a straight. Plus, a big blind could easily have hit 2 pair. But 2 pair could not possibly bet here. I am not even sure a set can bet here, but rather check calls. Because he is out of position, either he has a 7 or he is drawing and trying to push me off. But if he had the 7, that means he check called with a gut shot. And that doesn't seem that probable. So the big determining factor here is he may very well just be putting me on ace-king. If he has a redraw, why not check call? If he has the 7, why not check and let me bet again? The lead out on the turn is definitely backwards, which means he is either very tricky or he just betrayed his bluff. I tend to think he's overplaying his hand or has nothing. I go with my read, I shove my stack in, and he insta-folds, and that is that. Until next time, this is Clumbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you, trust your reads.
Remember Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited. He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
Well, Scott, you know, I hearken back to my early reporting days when I used to work for a newspaper called the New Haven Register in Connecticut. And, you know, they sent me up to the Tums Classic, which is a bowling tournament.
Yes.
Up near Hartford, Connecticut. And they're like, while you're up there, you know, just pick somebody to interview. Do a little feature on them or something. You know, try to pick the guy that that you need to talk to. And I was like, all right. So, you know, I'm watching the bowling, and there's this guy. And I won't mention who the bowler is. It doesn't matter. But I'm like, hey, you know, this guy is he's a young, upcoming bowler, really good. I'm gonna interview this guy. And I interviewed him. Did a nice Q&A with him, did a nice little story on the guy, and he won the tournament 3 days later. And it was like, you know, divine intervention. You know, I pick one guy to talk to, and that guy wins the whole thing. Well, lo and behold, I'm in Vegas, and I'm like, all right, we got a player of the year race here between Michael the Grinder Mizrachi and Frank Casella. Frank Casella's won 2 bracelets. Grinder's won the 50K bracelet. They've both cashed about the same amount of times. Who do we pick? And then we ultimately decided Grinder was the man. And I started talking to him because I felt like, you know, he could have a big main event. Well, what does he do? He makes the November 9. I mean, we clearly made the right choice here. So I finally tracked him down. Actually, I'm hoping that most of our listeners will read the story because it's a pretty funny setup on how I finally got this guy to sit down and talk to me.
Yeah, it's a really good story. We'll be posting that to the web here pretty soon.
Yeah, actually, the story is up, but the actual whole issue will be up probably by the time people start hearing this. But But yeah, it was a real fun interview. I just got the highlights. But the reason why I'm setting it up is right when the interview was over, he says to me, "Hey, did you hear about me and Michelle Obama?" I was like, "What?" And my ears all perk up. I'm like, "What are you talking about?" So he says, "Here, put the recorder back on." So I said, "All right." So he tells me a story about the first lady, and then we zoom back to the whole beginning of the interview. So here is Michael DeGrinder Mizrachi talking about Michelle Obama and then his wonderful run at the World Series of Poker.
So actually, when I took my hour dinner break during the 50K event on the final table, I decided to go. I was kind of short. I had like a little over $1 million. I decided to go back to the Wynn Casino and just take a nice hot shower and change and just taking the like I'm starting all over again, like a fresh stack, and beginning the tournament all over again. So I decided my dinner break to the Rams, just go back to Wynn, take a hot shower, and then. When I went downstairs, the CIA stopped us, and Lily's like, "We're in a rush," and they're like, "Please, ma'am, wait 30 seconds." He's like, "We're playing for $2 million." She goes, "Ma'am, step back." So Lily couldn't do anything. She's like, "What do you mean? What's going on?" And then you see Michelle Obama, pass through and going up to the same elevator as we came up to, and kind of said hi to everybody. And after that, maybe she brought me luck. I don't know. And the president, he's got a beautiful wife. I mean, it's very maybe that that little smile of Michelle Obama maybe brought me luck. I don't know, but it was a pretty cool thing. It was exciting to see the president's wife, and who knows if I'll ever experience that again. And after that, it's almost like go ahead, Grinder, go win it, And I end up winning the tournament. Maybe it's her like that. Maybe she brought me luck. I don't know. Who it was, but I want to say thanks to her as well.
I have to know for the record, how do you pronounce your last name?
So the last name I pronounce is Mizrachi.
Right. No, it doesn't bother you though, like TJ, it's really Cloutier to him, but yeah. People call him Cloutier and he just
Yeah, I call him Cloutier too. I didn't even know it was Cloutier.
Yeah. So it doesn't bother you when I say Mizrachi?
Sounds better Cloutier. No, Mizrachi. Mizrachi's fine because I told everybody to say Mizrachi.
Okay.
Some people think it's Italian, say Mizrachi. Some Americans say Mizrachi. Everyone has Rocky Balboa kind of.
Yeah.
And the real pronunciation is Mizrachi and like an Israeli pronunciation.
So you talked about you played poker and as a young guy, leaving high school, skipping classes, stuff. Can you tell me about the days of learning poker, sitting on Mama Grinder's lap?
Well, when we started playing poker, Rob and I were about probably starting to get professionally playing. I would say 15, 16. Rob and my mother went to deal with Dania High Lie, and that's where it's in Dania, Florida.
Right.
And they started playing, dealing with each other, and then... And also my mom's friend, Ariella, she would pass. One of my mom's best friends. I remember she dealt for her first dealing. It was she dealt counterclockwise. And she got, fired pretty much right away. And then, Rob and my mom, they brought me to casinos. My mom always loved casinos. My parents, my dad was always into casinos, but he slowed down. My dad was always a very hard worker, so he slowed down with the gambling, He wasn't very supportive of it, but my mom was always supportive of whatever we've done. So Rob and I, Rob just brought me pretty much to the cruise ships. We talked about, analyzed hands together, we learned from each other, and when it came to we were playing online poker, this, that, and we were watching each other play. But when it came to tournament poker, I kind of picked it up on my own.
Okay.
I was watching him. I was like, no, this is not the way to play. I was watching everybody play, and I put everybody's minds together, and I created my own mind, my own way of style playing, and it worked out well for me the past few years. And now it's coming to I'm having a great start for my career. I wouldn't say the start of my career. I might have started my career maybe 15, 14 years ago, but for my tournament career, I was starting about in 04. So that's already, I can't believe it's already 6-7 years already, and it's a long time. And, I enjoy the game. I have the passion for it. I love poker. And if I didn't enjoy it, I would move to seek another career. But this is a career I choose, and I'm glad I'm glad everything's going, and I enjoy it.
Now, talk about some of those times back then, like the cruise ships and things like that. I'm not really aware of what Florida poker was like on the ships back then. I knew that it was still the whole $10 pot and stuff in actual casinos. How could you have really honed your skills on those kind of limits?
Well, at first I started playing 1-5, 7 card stud and, spread limit. At the age of 16, 15, 16, 17, you don't have the bankroll, at the age of, when you start being, you know, progressing and picking up, you know, the pace and building your bankroll. So it took a lot of time, and I was just, you know, starting the game. I had a great start. I've been winning since day one. Then I started playing $4, $8 limit hold'em, and I've been beating all the time. Then eventually I ended up playing $5, $10 online limit hold'em. I was more of a limit player. Then I started, you know, as the game went on, I started playing private games, 10, 20, 20, 40, limit hold'em. And then I just kind of started stepping it up. Then I decided, like, and I think it was 03, I decided to be responsible. In 02 or 03, I wanted to have responsibilities and try something else and have a job. But even though I was working in Bennigan's when I was 18 years old, uh-huh. 17, 18, but, you know, I wasn't really making much. You know, I was just doing whatever, just to make some money to play poker with. And when I was, like, in 02 and 03, so I was about, you know, I would say 22 maybe, so I wanted to, you know, have responsibilities and try something different and work at a, you know, work as a poker deal because I know I could deal. But I was doing it more just to wake up in the morning to do something instead of just being lazy every day and you know, have my own schedule and, you know, do whatever I want to do. So I chose that path to, you know, for a few months. It wasn't too long till they terminated me. I mean, they had on the termination sheet, they couldn't fill out, you know, there was not enough room on the paper, you know, how many excuses I had to get fired, you know. It's just like every excuse in the world I had just to get, fired. Because I wasn't used to, you know, I wasn't used to being responsible and having a job. So I just took my own path, and one day, you know, I met my wife in the casino in the break room. She asked me one day. I told her I was a really good poker player, and I was a very good, excellent heads up. She goes, "Well, let's play heads up." And she took my number down, and then she called me the same night, and we've been together since that day, since 03, I believe it was, whatever it was, 03, 04. So it's been a long time, and then we drove to Foxwood together. And I think it was March of 04, and that's when I started my tournament trail.
That's where I met you, too, actually. You won't remember, but, I mean, that's where I met you the first time. And back then, I had asked you, hey, if Florida actually gets uncapped, now, this is before 07, that first thing, will you spend more time there? And now it actually is uncapped, so what are your plans?
Well, my plans, I already moved back to Florida, so I've been in Florida now. I'm actually, there's also a big reason I moved to Florida because I'm a very sports oriented, and I love my football team, my basketball team, my, you know, baseball team, and Las Vegas had nothing for me.
Yeah.
Besides, like, traveling to Los Angeles, you know, watch Lakers. I'm a Lakers fan as well, but my number one choice of team, my preference of team would be all Miami teams. I'm a big Dolphin fan, big Heat fan, and always been, you know, and I was very supportive of my teams, and I miss it too much, the water, just the lifestyle. It's, you know, the beaches, you know, hanging out with my kids on the beach. I'm not used to, like, being in the desert just with this, you know, this blow dryer weather, and I just can't take it. I like the humidity, actually, and I enjoy the hurricanes whenever they come down to South Florida. It
gets a little bit exciting when they finally come.
Yeah. Some people, you know, root against the hurricanes. I root for the hurricanes. You know, just like, you know, something that's fun to experience. You know, some people say no, but, you know, I'm a Floridian, and I love that wet weather.
Yeah. It's like it gives you something to do during the week until you start watching the weather channel. Is it going to turn toward us? That kind of thing.
Yeah, I just prefer not to be on a football day.
Given that Hold'em is pretty much the only game people have ever seen you play really on TV and things like that, they think you're that type of player. But of course, you know, you won the 50K Players Championship, which was an 8-game mixed. What's it like playing the 8 games like that? And what is your favorite game then? Is there a different one than Hold'em?
My favorite game has always been 7-card stud. And I just finished playing last year all morning. I've been playing for like 12-hour session of the conference games. You know, I just got back.
I've been
playing since I went to Disney, then went, got back to hotel, went straight till 10 in the morning playing 7-card. I actually won $12,000 the 100-200 limit game, which they always spread in the Commerce Casino. You know, any stud game's always been my game of choice. I enjoy the draw games a lot, and I mean, I play so much of other games. It's like, you know, I play more of the other games than I play No Limit Hold'em. But, you know, I enjoy No Limit Hold'em tournaments, but I don't enjoy No Limit Hold'em cash games unless it's a great spot, because pretty much I give most people credit in No Limit Hold'em, and it's not not a fairly game. It's easy to learn, but you know, a lot of people have a great idea of the game, and there's a lot of weaker spots in the mixed games. And I've been playing mixed games, you know, for years and years, 10 years. And I remember when my brother and I were playing Chinese poker together like 10 years ago. And actually, my brother's pretty much mastered that game. I haven't mastered it because I don't play it as much, but I'm good at it. But my brother's great at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's pretty much. If there's a game that he's better than me, it's definitely Chinese poker. All around. He's a great poker. We're both, you know, Rob and I just, you know, both great in all games. And I think we both have a very, very, you know, strong, good, great instincts as well. And, you know, and just the way we analyze hands and the advice we give each other just is unbelievable. And that's why, you know, I give a lot of credit to my brother, and I'm sure he gives a lot of credit to me. And, you know, and I enjoy it. I'm just, thank God, I have a great group of family that sticks together, very supportive of each other, and, you know, and a great group of poker players.
It was only the third time that I'd ever had actually had siblings at the final table. What was that like for you?
Well, to have siblings on the final table wouldn't be, you know, as, you know, first Eric and myself finished first and second in a limit hold'em tournament, $1,000 buy-in. Of course I finished first.
Right.
But I actually put him in the tournament, so it was pretty funny. But it was only like a 41-man field at the bike. And I remember John Bonetti, like, God bless him, he was a very nice guy, he passed away.
Yeah.
But he was like, "What is a fucking sandwich?" His words. But, you know, we were never playing with it. You know, we're just, you know, just, we were very competitive. And and then when Rob and I made this, actually, $50,000 buy-in, I mean, it's not like, you know, $1,000, $2,000 tournament where we wouldn't mind knocking each other out. But, you know, it's very hard.
Can you take me through the events of that tournament? Like, close calls, key hands, anything like that that stands out?
Exactly. In this tournament, there's never been a close call until I was heads up, and that's
really
the only time I was on for my tournament life. And, you know, one of the greatest hands, actually, they missed it, I guess, on TV, was when I was against Lyle Berman when I flopped. I remember the flop came like ace, like jack six or something, maybe two spades. He had 6-6, 7-7, had pocket aces, had set a top set. And then he said, "Grinder, there's no way you can have pocket aces again." And then he decided, he check raised me all in, and I did have a set of aces. He had bottom set. He turned quad sixes, and I was like, "Oh." He's like, "Okay, no more ace, no ace, no ace." And the river comes ace. I make quad aces. So I mean, that was one of the great, probably one of the greatest hands in the horse championship ever. But it's an 8-game mix, so I can't really say a horse championship.
Yeah.
It's the players championship. But that was a hand I'll never forget, and also the hand that saved me when I had ace seven of clubs versus ace jack of diamonds against Vladimir when I was heads up, and that's for my tournament life. And thank God the five of clubs came in the river. And after that, you know, I never looked back. And I, you know, I played my heart out. And I was actually drenched from this tournament. I never had a tournament take so much out of me, so many hours, so many, just watching cards, you know, change of pace of games, you know, change style, you know, sometimes, you know, you're in, you know, drive, sometimes you're neutral, then you got to reverse, slow it down a little bit. So, but I was always, you know, super focused, and just when that last hand finish was like the best feeling in the world, thank God it was over with. And I think it drained me out for a lot of the World Series. I think I could have maybe, you know, I wouldn't say I had a great World Series, I'm not complaining, but I mean, I think I could have, you know, probably put a little more effort into my World Series and probably had a, you know, maybe got another brace, but this took a lot out of me.
Yeah.
And, I wouldn't say it, you know, hurt me, but I mean, it just like, it went, you, to just a play tournament 5-6 days to the stretch, I mean, just, it takes a lot out of you. I mean, sometimes maybe I needed the break, and I should have took some time off, but I actually played, I think the main event was my 42nd event, and that was, jeez, a lot of events, and some events, you know, I just, you know, kind of gave it away because I was in other events, and I was double dipping here and there. Overall, it was a great World Series, and hopefully I can have a deep run in the main event.
Now, did you have any remorse at all about knocking your brother out, or was it a,
well,
you know?
I wonder when when you knock him, you know, your brother out, you know, it's a feeling like you know, it's like, it was like I was saying, it was like it's a, you know, lose-lose situation, a win-win situation. If, you know, if I finished fifth and fourth, I think it was a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
I think I felt a lot worse. But now that I won and, you know, he came fifth, I'm sure if you told me he's going to get fifth and I was going to get first, he would take it in the same way for me. If he told me I was going to finish fifth and he would finish first, I'll accept that invitation all day. And, you know, I'm sure he was happy with the results and the way everything went.
How special was it to win Chip's trophy like that and have it to be your first bracelet as well?
Well, I mean, to say you won 50K for your first base is, I'm sure it's anyone's, you know, poker player's dream, you know, and you know you're winning a large amount of money as well, and the feel just to overcome, you know, I was playing 116 of the best players in the, you know, 116 of the best players in the world were entered the, you know, tournament, a lot of the great 8-game mixed players, and it was a really, really tough field, and Chip Reese was, you know, a legend, and he was in my time, but I didn't get to play much of Chip. I wish I could have, but, you know, from what I hear, he was one of the greatest players, and just to be on his trophy is, you know, it's any poker player's dream, just to have your name engraved on his trophy. It's like, you know, it's like just, it's almost like it's winning another bracelet, winning another title. I mean, it's like almost won two bracelets in one. And, yeah. And it's something I'll never forget, and my name will always be there. And I hope I hope one day I'll be remembered as a legend like Chip Reese was.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-Up PokerCast.
Back to home games for this week's Hand of the Week, Chris.
Cool, very cool. I like that.
Always interesting things in the home game because you got not only poker, you got friends playing, and then you've got like cards getting misdealt and all kinds of weird stuff. So it's like a big witch's cauldron of poker decision making. This one comes from Tom Fair, I believe his name is. He goes by Top Dog, though.
Okay.
Two P's, two G's.
Okay.
He's definitely a hoss, you know, two S's. All right, so here's what Tom sends us. He says it's his monthly home game tourney, 22 players, $20 buy-in. Starting check is 10,000 units. You know, you don't get these kind of tournaments in...
Not our home game, you know.
Yeah. And blinds go up every 25 minutes. This is, a pretty long $20 tournament.
Yeah, that's a lot of play for 20 bucks.
All right, our blinds are at 5,100 right now, and on the very first hand of the tournament, our hero is dealt ace-queen offsuit.
Okay.
All right, pretty good hand.
Yeah, not too bad.
He says he plays with these players every month and know them well. He has the leader pole in my shop carved with the winner's name and the number of notches over the last 5 years.
Jeez.
That's pretty cool. It's not a traveling trophy, but it's... Wow!
Wow! Notches. Sorry. So basically, we're our top dog here is the top dog in this
tournament.
Exactly. Okay.
He's the top dog. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And he's got 5 years of experience with these people, apparently.
Jeez.
All right. So he's under the gun. Remember, he has ace queen offsuit. What do you do?
Well, I know the players well, so I know how they'll react to whatever I do. So normally, I would raise with a hand like this. Occasionally, I would muck this hand under the gun.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Clearly, he's not doing that. So if I'm going to play it, I'm going to play it for a raise. So I'll make it 300, I guess. I got 10K in front of me. I'll make it 300.
Yeah, this is a hand. I mean, I don't fold it as much as I probably just said, but I'll put it a 3X raise. But if I get much heat, I'm fine laying this down. And I'm fine doing that because the next time I raise under the gun, I might have a stronger hand if somebody thinks that I'm getting cued again. Boom.
Yeah.
Hammer time.
Yep, setting up future moves with it. So plus, they don't know what we have when we muck it, but unless we show it face. But yeah, I like a 3X raise here if I'm going to play. I don't want to limp with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so our hero does do the 3X, raises to 300, and gets three callers, but the big blind, small blind fold. 1350 in the pot, and we see a flop of 5, queen, deuce, rainbow.
That's you can't ask for much more than that.
Yeah, yeah. With ace queen, I mean, you'd love to flop a Broadway or something like that. But I mean, it's such a raggedy board.
Yeah.
Top pair, top kicker. We have the momentum. I mean, the putting the pressure on here, folks. I mean, that's a great flop, right?
Yeah, that's a nice flop for our hand. You know, I mean, you can't be afraid of the monsters under the bed, as Fesso would say. So, I'm gonna bet about 1,000 here. Maybe, yeah, about 1,000, maybe 1,100, and see where I am.
And remember, it's important, I think, that the blinds are both out, so the 5 and deuce are largely immaterial here. I guess when somebody else might have had a, you know, you still might have a pocket pair, but I think it's less likely, I think.
Yeah, we got to put some sort of bet out there.
Yeah, so you're going to put about 1,000 or so, you said?
Yeah, about 1,000, maybe 11. It just depends how I feel on who's in the hand with me. I don't know who's in the hand with me in this, so I'll bet 1,000.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I'm going to put in my normal C bet here and be happy. This is when I'm happy to put that normal C bet in because I actually hit my hand.
Yeah, you actually hit something.
So, you know, if people think I'm getting crazy, I can, you know, smack them right back down in the line. So, you know, I don't know what Top Dog's normal bet is here, but he puts in a pot size bet of $13.50.
I don't mind that bet. It just seems like it's a little more than you need to bet. You're going to get the same... I think you're going to get the same reaction from everyone and the same folds and calls and whatever with betting 1,000 or 1,100. So why risk the extra 2-350 if you don't have to? But right. I don't fault that bet either. In case there is some sort of ace four out there who's suited, you know, who's just getting frisky on the first hand of the tournament. So and you know, I'll lose less money if somebody raises me and I can get away from it. So I wouldn't bet that much, but I don't really fault it either.
All right, I agree. All right, but he gets two callers, Chris.
Shh.
Two callers and a pot-sized bet on a raggedy board. I don't like that.
I don't like that at all. No way. Once that happens, you're like, okay, now you got to start going through the range of hands and people to just call. And then the second caller is even scarier, yes. I think, because really, normally a second caller like that is on a draw, but there's really no draw here unless you have that ace three, ace four, and I just don't feel that. So... Oh my God! It feels like we're squashed somewhere.
Yeah it's wow.
I mean, it could be something like jacks and tens, you know, not thinking the queen is hit and they're probably good. But
yeah, that's true too.
Second call, holy cow! Yeah. All right. Well, I think depending on the next card, I'm probably shutting it down now.
All right. So as you collect all those bets, 5,400 in the pot. The turn is an 8, an offsuit 8, so 4 suits on the board, so we're not worried about a flush coming at all. But the 8 doesn't really queasy our upset stomach, does it?
No, it really doesn't help us. If it was another queen or if it was an ace, I might feel better. Or even if it was something like a 4 or a 3, I might feel better because then I know I can get away from it because, hey, maybe the guy's got a wheel and I'll feel better right about folding the 3 to a wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
But right now... I mean, really, to protect your hand, you're going to have to bet like $4,000, and that's like 50% of your remaining stack. It's like, oh, it's amazing how fast the pots can escalate, and yet you have 10,000 chips. A minute ago, yep. It seemed like forever that you had, you know, forever in this tournament. I mean, and now, geez, you could be looking at your whole stack being gone on ace-queen. I don't want to go broke with a queen in my hand, so I'm checking.
Yeah, and that's a good point that our good friend Sam Minatello, who runs One Eye Jack, says it doesn't matter how many chips he starts his players out with, the pot's going to get that big anyhow.
Yeah.
So it's more the structure. So, I mean, yeah, here's the situation. Very first hand of the tournament, and we got 5,400 in the pot, and if we bet a reasonable amount here, we're pot committed on the first hand.
Yeah.
But top.
Yeah. Oh, that's scary. I'm going to have to either I do a defensive bet or I bet another maybe 2,000 and then see what happens, or even then they're getting probably close to the right odds if they're on a draw somehow. I don't know how, but if they are, but it just feels like we're beat with those two callers. So I'm just going to check and see what they're willing to do.
Well, remember, we're out of position here too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no shame in waving the white flag. I think, you know, of course I wave the white flag perpetually. You know, it's on my, antenna on my car.
That's your avatar.
Yeah. But I mean, you're right. I mean, I think the worst thing you can do here is bet that 2,000 feeler bet, because that's money that's just down the drain.
Yeah.
Because if somebody has a hand or they're still in a draw, that's not enough to get them off. You bet more than that and you're crushed. You're gone.
Yeah.
So I can't see any other action but the check here, and hope it just gets checked behind because people are playing crazy or something, and Or somebody puts in a little tiny bet that I could probably be comfortable calling. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm in that camp. I think I have to check just because of the fact that a real bet here commits me, and the guy has a set I can't get away from it after I've committed. So, and then a small bet, like you said, I thought about the feeler bet, but maybe you've convinced me otherwise because, again, it's not enough to get a draw out, even though I don't know there is a draw. And then if it's just a set, somebody's just going to call all along and then make a bet on the river anyway. So that's money down the drain. So I'm going to try checking and see what happens too.
All right. Well, our hero goes the former decision and bets 5,000.
Oh.
Almost a pot-sized bet.
Holy cow.
Gets one caller but one folder.
Five. Oh my God! So you have no money left.
Five. Yeah, we put $63.50.
66.50.
Yeah,
we have 3,000 left. I mean, what kind of bet on the end can you fold to? You know, if you check, and then what kind of bet are you going to make if you don't? And if you check, I mean, oh man, that stinks. I don't like that bet at all, man. That's just way too much.
All right, a river car is a king.
Oh, even worse. Now you want to just vomit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
somebody has king queen.
Absolutely nothing to like about this king. Absolutely nothing.
Oh, man.
And our hero knows it and checks. And, of course, his remaining player pushes all in as expected with any cards. You know, if you check on the river, I would think.
Geez, how could you fold now? I mean, I realize that you could fold and have 3,000, whatever it is, 400 left or whatever. And you'll still have 30 big blinds, I guess. So I guess you could get away from it.
Yeah, 30 big blinds, and blinds are 25 minutes. So
yeah,
I mean,
I'll fold. I'll fold on the river.
Yeah, just change your whole strategy and play a short stack here for a while. I mean, there's no reason to go home on the first tan just because you were walking around with two left feet, right?
Yeah, I mean, at first I was like, how can you fold? But I keep forgetting that it's the first hand. So, yeah, I'll have 30-something big blinds left, 33, 34 big blinds. Okay, I'm folding. And saying,
of course,
nice hand, well played.
Of course, this is your home game, too, so you know these players, too. So you know whether this guy that's going to take this big pot, if he's a softer player, then it's even more reason to fold here because you get a shot to get those chips back.
Yep.
I mean, if he's a really tough player, that might change your mind a little bit. But you're right. I mean, more than 3,000 left, 1,500, I'll take my shot.
Yep. I'll take a chance. I double up once or whatever, and I'm right back in it as normal. So, hey, how does it change if an ace comes on the river? What do you do then? You have aces up?
Oh, ace on the river, I'm definitely calling.
You're definitely calling, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take that, and that I'll feel much more comfortable taking the shot that I'm, that I'm good.
Now,
but,
do you
right
shove
now,
on the
we've
river?
Got second pair.
Do you shove on the river, or
shove
do you just
river?
Check call?
No, I probably check call.
Yeah.
Because I still don't know what this guy has. I mean, it's been scary the whole way, right?
Yeah, it feels like a set or kings. Now it feels like kings up, kings and queens. But, yeah, it's been scary the whole way. I'll be happy to take the spot down with a check if he wants. And if he bets, I'll call.
Yeah.
Ace queen. But anyway, on this hand, the way it actually went, I'm letting it go.
Right. All right, well, a hero goes into the tank here and admits not long enough. He wonders if his opponent called him with ace-king to the river or has king-queen or a set, of course. And he correctly added up his chips, and he has 33.50 left and did not want to sit around the whole day waiting for this tournament to end. It was at his place. Interesting dynamic when you're hosting the game.
Yeah.
And you're out on the first hand.
You can't go home.
You can't go home. Yeah, you're stuck there. You know, maybe turn on the TV, watch a little Golden Girls or something, or everybody else finishes up. So our hero decides to fold.
Yeah, the smart play. I'm hoping that he tells us what the guy had. It was killing me, but definitely the way to go. You've got plenty of big blinds there. You know, you're going to be in the blind next hand and stuff. That's going to suck, but. Really, you got plenty of time, man. This hand could have taken all of, what, 3 minutes? You still have 20-something minutes left probably in this level. Man, I would just sit back and pick your hands now.
Yeah. Well, our villain did show his cards. Pair of sevens.
Oh, no. That's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I would say the same thing, but... All right, so it's the first hand of the tournament, right?
Yeah.
Raises to 300. I'm willing to speculate with a pair early on in a 10,000 chip tournament with 25 minutes. I'll do a little set mining for a 3x raise.
Yeah.
Now, it's the flop call that's a little tougher, but if you know this player and you don't think he hit that queen, your sevens could be good, right?
Yeah. Well, the turn is the worst one. We bet $5,000 a turn with an eight and a queen.
So, obviously, he must have had a read on us or has a healthy disregard for chips.
Or it's one of those situations where, you know, you read the player as they think they have a great hand because they don't know what they're doing. So, you read them correctly because they think they have a great hand and they're playing it strong. And it's not really a great hand, but they don't understand poker. So, maybe it could be that situation, too, where you read their emotions and everything correctly, but... they just didn't know really how good their hand was. They overplayed it.
Now, at the end of this hand, he says that the villain will play any two cards, as we've just seen. So I wonder if that information at the beginning of the hand would have affected how we would have played it.
Yeah, I mean, I still wouldn't have bet the amount he bet the whole way. Think about it, really. I mean, think about if on that turn, instead of betting $5,000, he checks. I don't think the player shoves. Or think about if he, you know, only bets $1,000 on the flop, gets two callers, and then on the turn, since the pot at that point is only about $2,900, you can get away with betting $1,500, and then you get one caller again. Mm-hmm. Then on the river, you still have like $6,000, $7,000 left, and then you check. This guy shoves $7,000 with a pair of sevens. I don't think so. He might make a bet of $2,000. Then you can make a call and see what he has, and you know who knows, and you would have won the hand. So I think that the amount of bets that he made, the way he made the bets, cost him to have to fold on the river. Whereas if he'd kept the pot small ball, he would have been able to see the river there probably. And I've seen the turn the bet on the river and what he would have gotten.
Absolutely,
so.
Very very good point. Very good.
Thanks, buddy. Once in a while, I have him.
All right, Top Dog, we're gonna help you out here with a little swag. And we are going to give you a free download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from element26.net. So, you know, plug this hand in there and see whether it has better advice than we just gave you.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, I'd like to thank Grinder for sitting down and talking with us, our Ante Up World Series Player of the Year. It was a fun conversation. And, Scott, try to enjoy the rest of your vacation. I know you're going to miss me.
Every day I wake up with a heavy heart, just longing out the window, waiting to get home to see you.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We will see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.